Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the October session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Larry Welch from Plattsmouth, Nebraska. I'm pleased to be joined here today. Judge Frankie Moore of North Platte, who's on my right, and Judge Rico Bishop of Lincoln, who will be joining us remotely today. We typically do here, just wait until a couple seconds here. I'll call you up for the first case. You're the ones present here today, so that'll be simple enough. Remind you that the public nature of these proceedings, these are live streamed and ultimately archived. So if there's any confidential or private information, I would remind you to remain cognizant of that today. All arguments in this particular case will be 10 minutes today. And without further ado, we'll call Summer versus Summer, the appellant. Please approach. That's case number 19-1141. Please.
Your Honors, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Counsel, I might just add, if you're comfortable, you certainly
can. I take off the mask.
Yes, sir.
This is my first time through this with the pandemic, and I so it's different to all. So thank you. May it please the court, I represent Ms. Summer, who's the appellant in this matter. To provide some perspective on this, I would note that there was a consent decree that was entered in 2015 in this matter. The parties had four children together. There were two girls and two boys. At the time of trial last fall, the two eldest girls had aged out. Now there was one of the girls had testified at trial, and I'll get into that. But this was a consent decree in 2015, and I'm just trying to give some perspective with respect to where we feel the trial court abuses discretion as to the material change in circumstances. So in that 2015 consent decree, Mr. Summer, or the appellee in this case, agreed to give custody of the two boys, Jacob and Tanner, to Ms. Summer. At the time of the 2015 consent decree, Jacob, the oldest boy, was in second grade and was 7 years old, and Tanner, the youngest boy, was in pre-K. At the time, it was probably 4 years old. At the time of trial, Jacob was in seventh grade at Morton Middle School in Omaha, and then Tanner was at Laura Dodge Elementary in fourth grade. Now, why this is important is because at the time of the decree in 2015, there was evidence adduced at trial that Jacob was on an individual education plan. Okay. And the record is ripe with those individual education plans, or the IEPs, I'll just call it from here on out. He had one at the time of the consent decree in 2015, this individual education plan where he had several diagnoses or several learning impairments. He's had one throughout throughout his schooling, and he still had one as of his seventh grade year when we came to trial. There was evidence in the record that progress had been made as recent as his seventh grade year, where they actually dropped one of the secondary diagnoses, which was a speech disability. And I'll get back to why that's important, but even at the time of the decree in 2015, just prior to the decree being entered, there was evidence that he was at a parochial school, St. Pius, St. Leo, and he was kicked out for behavioral issues. Now, the evidence that Dad put forth that's in the record was a third grade IEP for Jacob and a fourth grade IEP for Jacob, I'm not going to say it was cherry picked, but there's no doubt that these were Jacob's most troubling years. Then we go to Tanner. Tanner was in pre-K at the time of the consent decree, fourth grade at Laura Dodge when we got to trial. Tanner has what's called an XYY. It's a chromosome type disability that causes behavioral problems and learning disabilities. He was in a special school at the time of the decree, Joslin Elementary. He was also on an IEP at the, time of the decree, and has been an IEP and still was at the time of trial. This all goes back to the material change of circumstance.
Counsel, if I might,
yes,
perhaps fast forward you to what I think that it sounds like the trial court relied upon primarily is that since the decree, it's not so much that they had an IEP and still have one, it's the escalating behavioral issues that they've encountered at school. And so can you address that for us, please?
Jacob still had behavioral issues at school. As much as the start of the school year. But our argument goes more back to there was progress in the record. Here's a situation where Dad agreed at the time to do an overnight visitation during the week at his choosing. And this gets into my argument in terms of not so much, I'm going to liken it or analogous to an unclean hands. And every other weekend, Dad exercised 0% of his weeknight overnight visitation from 2015 to the modification. And even after the modification was filed, the father did not exercise his overnight visitation on the weeknights.
And how does that relate to the behavior issues at school?
Well, here we have the father that's coming in complaining that the mother is not doing her job when the father in this situation could have been, and I'm not even, the weeknight visitation, he could have picked the kids up from school. So we're talking over 300 missed opportunities, and I'm not even counting the summer visitation. He could have picked the children up from school. He could have taken them home, did their homework, taken them to school the next morning. So if I'm doing this on 14-day increments, as we tend to do, he was given 4 out of 14. He was only exercising 2 out of 14. So here he is. He's come and made this thing that, Mom, it's all your fault, but he hasn't been doing his job. I want to make it analogous to an unclean hands. If I come into court and I ask to reduce my child support and I'm not paying child support, should I be able to reduce my child support? The same goes, if I'm coming into court and asking for custody, should I be able to ask for more time with my kids when I'm not exercising the time that I have? So admittedly, in the record, Mr. Summer said it was inconvenient for him. He's a Cass County Sheriff, so his job is such that he has, it's kind of a 2-5 schedule, but he has nights during the week where he could do it. He instead testified that he chose to work at Walmart instead of addressing these issues with the kids. So that's where the unclean hands argument comes in. And the travesty of the whole situation is the proposed plan that he submitted to the court, because he's a Cass County Sheriff, he works from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m., is we had these two boys that spent, if I'm doing the 14-day increments, they spent 14 days with a parent, either mom or dad. At the time, it was 12 overnights with mom, because dad was an extra, and 2 with dad that every other weekend. And they went to a plan that he proposed, knowing that his work schedule time of trial was 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. They went to a work schedule, or it goes to a situation where now they're exercising 4 overnights with mom because the schedule flip-flops, so she gets to pick a night during the week that dad wasn't exercising. And now dad, because of his work schedule, is only home 4 out of those 14 nights.
But didn't he testify that if that was adopted, he would ensure that he didn't work the weekends that he had the children?
Even I'm not even taking into account he's not working the weekends that he does have the children, and that's how it was set up before. I'm adding those weekends in when I'm saying that the schedule that he put forth, that he said that his new wife could do the, so now she's essentially, we had 4 out of 14 now with the new schedule with mom. We have dad only being home, when I say home, he works from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. So he gets home, if he was not working overtime, 4 a.m. Only being home or able to pick up the kids from school 4 out of 14 nights. And then so those other six nights, the mother or the stepmother is picking up from school. And this is in the record. She's putting the kids to bed. She's doing their homework. She's doing everything that my client was doing.
In response to Judge Moore's initial question, you don't deny the fact that the record indicates there's an escalation of behavioral issues. Your point is that the father didn't do his part, and now he's going to come in, sweep in, and take over the point.
Yeah, I can. It's essentially speculating that I can do better, even though I haven't put forth the effort to see if. I mean, we're talking 300 plus overnights that the dad that he let go, and that doesn't even count 10 weeks of summer visitation where he admitted he only exercised one. So that's and these are school nights where he could have picked up from school, and he said it was inconvenient. I wouldn't say that behaviors were escalating, because there is evidence in the record. The IEPs that the dad introduced were several years old. And the IEPs that I introduced showed progress in terms of a developmental delay being struck off for Tanner, and then also the secondary diagnosis being struck for Jacob. But what I'm getting at in terms of material change of circumstances, when they agreed to this in 2015, these behaviors and these disabilities were already in place. Nothing has changed.
Mr. Hoffman.
Yeah,
I see you're out of time, but I just have a quick question. Is there anything in the record to explain the four root canals of one of the boys, but, you know, by the time he's in fourth grade?
Your Honor, there is not.
Thank you.
My client was responsible for the parent-teacher conferences, the IEPs, the medical appointments, but there's nothing to explain the dental portion of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How far did we take in the list?
40 seconds.
Thank you. You'd add that to Apple's back, please.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I am Stephanie Weber Maloney, and I represent the appellee, Sean Summer. This is an appeal from an order modifying Sean and Jennifer's dissolution of marriage decree that was entered in 2015. As Mr. Hoffman said, it involves their two minor boys, Jacob, who was born in 2007, and his 12, Tanner, who was born in 2009 and is 10. The trial court gave Sean final decision-making authority but left the joint legal custody in place. It awarded Jennifer parenting time basically on alternating weekends and one evening a week at her discretion. Sean lives in Plattsmouth, Jennifer lives in Omaha. The trial court deviated downward for Jennifer's child support obligation. It also ordered the parents to pay 50% of their son's expenses, and it ordered each party to pay their own attorney's fees. Our position is simple, that there was no abuse of discretion here, and that the trial court rulings are fully supported by the record in this case. There were substantial and material changes in circumstances.
Can you go directly to what Mr. Hoffman was talking about with regard to dad not exercising quite a substantial amount of parenting time that he had been awarded? Specifically, I'm curious about the summer parenting time where it looks like he exercised 7 out of 70 available days of parenting time in the summer. Is there anything in the record to explain that?
We acknowledge that he did not exercise all the parenting time that was awarded in the decree. He started exercising summer parenting time after it became apparent that the boys' behavioral issues were increasing substantially. His explanation in his testimony for not exercising the evening during the week was the drive distance between the party's house, his house being in Plattsmouth, that essentially you'd spend the entire evening visit driving back and forth between the two residences, and that didn't make a whole lot of sense to him.
That doesn't really address the summer parenting time where he would have had blocks of time, wouldn't he, that he could have exercised?
Yes, and he didn't for the first couple of years after the decree. He acknowledged that he did not exercise all the summer parenting time that he was awarded.
What was his explanation, if it's in the record?
It's not in the record. I don't know that he was ever asked why it wasn't being exercised, but he acknowledged that it wasn't until, you know, the point where the behavioral issues became so substantial with the boys that he did finally start taking the chunks of time that he was awarded. He was attempting to get a handle on the boys' behavior. He attempted to address that with the children's mother, and she simply refused to discuss the issues at all. Since the decree was entered, both boys have developed very serious behavioral issues. The highlights of them are set out both in the trial court's order, and their education, their development, and their health has been obviously adversely affected by what's been going since the decree was entered.
Excuse me. You know, you said it's all set out in the trial court's order, and I'm looking at that order, and it looks to me as though basically what's put in the order is what was put in the pleadings. Is there any other discussion by the trial court judge at the conclusion of trial? Is there anything to indicate that he considered Jacob's testimony in chambers?
He hasn't specifically noted that in the order, but there was no request, as is required to be made prior to trial, that the court make any specific findings of fact. There's nothing to indicate that he didn't take into consideration Jacob's testimony. Frankly, our position is that Jacob's testimony shouldn't have been given any great weight anyway, given the nature of the behavioral issues that were going on with Jacob. I mean, obviously, a child who is in middle school and has no rules being applied to him to the extent that he's getting kicked repeatedly out of school is going to want to stay with the parent that has no rules.
Doesn't the record indicate that Jacob was starting to show improvement now that he was at the middle school? And given that, wouldn't that indicate also that steps are being taken by the mother in order to address some of these problems, or maybe that he's just simply outgrowing some of those problems?
The mother claimed in her testimony that there was improvement going on there. There was nothing from the school to show that what she claimed was in any way true. According to Jacob, he wasn't doing as well as, I mean, his testimony actually conflicted with the mother's testimony about how well he was doing in school. In what way he wasn't doing well in school?
In what way did his testimony conflict with his mother's?
My recollection without reviewing the record would be she testified that his grades were good and he testified that his grades were not so good, especially in certain subjects. And with respect to the father, he started taking and trying to discuss with the mother, taking steps to address the children's behavior. I don't want to embarrass the children here in a public forum with going into the details, but they are reflected both in the court's order and in great detail.
But
didn't
those behaviors exist even when the children were much younger at the time of the initial divorce decree?
Certain of the behaviors existed, they grew increasingly worse. And my recollection from recent appellate decisions is that with respect to the unanticipated portion of Mr. Hoffman's argument, that there is fairly recent case law that says the unanticipated rule, so to speak, really applies to child support cases. That's how we've traditionally applied it. If you don't apply it that way, then you get in a situation like this where, okay, we had this behavior, even though it's now gotten worse, it existed at the time of the decree, so we can't do anything about it.
But basically what the trial judge would have had to decide is that just the escalating behavior alone constitutes a material change in circumstances.
Well, I think that's one of the things that the court could and did consider is the escalation of the behavior had gotten to the point where we're having situations such as security removing the children from situations at school, the children causing harm to other children in their classes, the children threatening teachers.
Counsel, what evidence is there that it was essentially the mother's fault that this was happening because she was the custodial parent. What you had mentioned, there were no rules. What evidence of that was there?
Well, there was some evidence of that in terms of the testimony by the oldest child himself as to the differences in discipline, for example, between households. Also, the older daughter, the daughter who was living, one of the two daughter, older daughters who was living with the mother, that's no longer a minor, testified to the children acting very differently when disciplined by their father than when disciplined by their mother. The school principal of the school that both the boys attended also indicated that he would contact the father and the father would be able to get control of the boy's behavior when the mother couldn't. There's also evidence in the record showing that despite some kind attempts to intervene and give the mother recommendations for things like counseling and help with the boys educationally and behaviorally, that she declined those offers at guidance regarding the children. And then you have the four root canals, which is just plain old neglect as far as we're concerned. I mean, the father stepped in at that point when he found out what the situation was, and the situation had apparently been neglected for so long that a very young child had four root canals.
What about his argument? Did he neglect his children and finally stepped in? I mean, can you just ignore them for a period of time like this and finally say, well, enough is enough?
Well, I think what he was trying to do was get the mother to take action. And then when the mother declined to take action and was doing things like refusing to send one of the children to the first 7 days of school because she didn't like the school the child was being assigned to, finally did say enough is enough. Do I think he can do that? I think you can as a parent. I don't think there's any validity to the argument of unclean hands, so to speak, because he didn't declare enough is enough earlier. He can now not do anything to get control of his children's situation. That, I think, is an absurd argument. And if there's no other questions, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. And I think you're out of time. So the matter is submitted. We thank you both.
Thank you.
You betcha.